First and foremost, I think what we were trying to do through using maps and geography to, you know, talk about criminal justice was we were, you know, we've been trying to reframe the conversation about crime and public safety onto communities rather than sort of on crime. And one of the things that, you know, occurred to me when we first started doing this was that if you shift the focus from crime events to where people live who are going in and out of prison, and you map that, you're going to have a very different story than if you're looking at, like, crime maps, which were much more popular. By shifting it to sort of show the disproportionate concentration of criminal justice in particular neighborhoods, you can start to talk about places rather than kind of get pigeonholed in that getting tough, being soft sort of polemic that everyone got stuck on. And so it was a story that I didn't think had really been told empirically. So we started collecting data from places about where people lived who were going in and out of prison and jail. And that helped us paint a geographic picture. And, of course, maps are much more compelling way to sort of portray the issue because it's, you know, everyone gets it, whether you're a researcher or a legislator, and everybody sort of sees immediately what's going on, which turns out to be really this mass migration, population displacement and resettlement project, even if unintentional, so that when you map, you know, where people are going in and out of prison from and returning to, you see this almost pattern of mass migration. And then we thought, you know, let's try to dramatize the trade-offs in the underwriting of this whole sort of cycling process. So because we had collected data on where everyone lived who was going in and out of prison, where they went to and for how long, and we knew how much it cost per day, we were able to translate the data into dollar estimates of block by block, how much is the, you know, how much is New York State paying to remove and return people from each of these blocks. So when we first looked at Brooklyn, we found 35 of what we then coined as million-dollar blocks, you know, single city blocks for which the state was paying more than $1 million a year to remove and return people to and from prison on average for about 3.5 years or so. Of course, none of that money was going into those places, right? It was renting prison cells. And so by doing the million-dollar blocks graphics and geographics, we were able to sort of shift the conversation and suggest that there's a trade-off there and that those dollars are really there for the benefit of the well-being of those places. And then you ask the imaginary question, you know, if you had the $1 million a year, that block and those guys, what would you do? Would you spend it all on sending them away for 2 or 3 years and then having them come back with no changes to the neighborhood? Or would you try to reinvest them in some other sort of conditions that are prevalent in the neighborhood itself? And so ultimately what we've done is shown or tried to show that these places are inundated with criminal justice and that no more criminal justice is going to make any difference. And that, in fact, when we look at the other kinds of data about those neighborhoods, like living environments, housing costs, income, poverty levels, health, etc., we start to find that they're, you know, have these sort of weak, there are many weak civil institutions. And in some ways, the criminal justice system is kind of responding to that sort of poverty and ill health with more criminal justice, as if that could sort of, you know, balance it out for the weakness of those other institutions. And of course it doesn't. So portraying all this vis-a-vis maps of neighborhoods has been a way of showing where the rubber really hits the road. Because even though we know about a lot of the statistics about mass incarceration and disproportionality, those disproportionalities are mild compared to the ones between one neighborhood and another in any particular major city. That's where the real differences are, and you get, you know, you really start to see how the system, where the system takes effect. As time has gone on, though, we've been looking more at these neighborhoods, and what becomes evident and what linked up in our mind with public health and the inevitability of really thinking more about this in terms of public health and public safety is that these neighborhoods are increasingly characterized by emergency response systems, urgent care response systems. So not just the prison or the jail, but also the emergency room, the homeless shelter, foster care, etc., last resort options, last resort techniques, but mainly aimed at populations that suffer from chronic issues. So increasingly, once we start to sort of add these up, we see incredible amounts of money being spent for emergency response systems for people who need chronic network, neighborhood network care, not emergency response care. And that's kind of where we've been increasingly focusing our vision on how do you dramatize that issue and start to suggest ways in which you can pull out of those emergency response approaches and start to develop the more useful neighborhood chronic care networks and outreach systems.